This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. An efficient, convenient, and safe transportation system is integral to the health of our economy and the quality of our life. The United States has long enjoyed one of the best and most efficient transportation systems in the world, but it is now facing significant challenges, increasing congestion, deterioration, and rising costs. Innovative solutions are required now in order to meet the anticipated demand and build a transportation system for the 21st century. With us today to discuss his efforts in this area is our very special guest, Peter Appel, Administrator of the Research and Innovative Technology Administration within the U.S. Department of Transportation. Peter, welcome.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I appreciate the opportunity.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Kunal Suryavanshi. Kunal, welcome. Peter, would you outline for us the mission of the Research and Innovative Technology Administration within the U.S. Department of Transportation? When was it created and what's its mission today?
Well, we just celebrated our five-year anniversary. It was created in 2005. It was the brainchild of former Secretary Norm Mineta. And the bill that created it was called the Norman Y. Mineta Research and Special Programs Improvement Act, which, among other things, created this agency whose mission it was to promote transportation research, solid analysis, and education across the different operating agencies of the department. And so in the five-year period in which we've existed, we have done a good bit of work in advanced transportation technology and research in statistical analysis and education and training, particularly developing the transportation workforce of the future.
Peter, how is RITA organized? What's the size of your budget, the number of employees, and your geographical footprint?
Well, first talk about the employees. We have about 725 employees at RITA. Most of them are actually up in Cambridge, Massachusetts at our Volpe National Transportation Systems Center, which is a major transportation research and system development operation. We also have employees at Oklahoma City, which is the location of our Transportation Safety Institute, which is a training facility. And the remainder of our employees are here at headquarters in Washington, about just over 100 here in headquarters. So the organizational structure includes six program offices: the Volpe National Transportation System Center in Cambridge, the Transportation Safety Institute that I mentioned in Oak City, and four offices based here in headquarters, which include the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, the Intelligent Transportation Systems Joint Program Office, the Research, Development, and Technology Coordination Office, and the Positioning, Navigation, and Timing Program, which deals with civil GPS policy. The budget is broken down into a number of components. The direct federal funding from Congress for the operation of RITA covers a few of those program offices and is about $40 million, supporting primarily the Bureau of Transportation Statistics and research and development programs. But we also have significant operating budget for the other facilities. The Volpe Center is a completely fee-for-service agency with no direct appropriations, but its annual operating budget through its clients across the DOT is in the range of $250 million, and the operating budget of the Transportation Safety Institute is about $20 million. Finally, the Intelligent Transportation Systems Joint Program Office oversees the ITS program, which is primarily a funded research program covering grants to academic organizations and others in the range of about $100 million a year. And then the budget for grants to universities is the last piece I want to cover. We have what's called the University of Transportation Center program, which has a budget of around $85 million a year. So various different pieces, but the direct RITA operating budget is just about the $40 million piece of it.
Peter, most of the agencies within the Department of Transportation are modal agencies. That is, they cover a mode of transportation, aviation, highway, railroad. But your administration is different. Could you tell us why that is the case? But more importantly, what are your responsibilities and duties as RITA administrator? And how does RITA support the overall mission of the Department of Transportation?
Well, as you said, unlike most of the other operating entities within DOT, we cover all of the modes of transportation. And so we are essentially a cross-cutting modal administration. And our purpose is to coordinate research to create synergies or facilitates the development of synergies across research programs across the department. Essentially, the philosophy is that we should strive that the whole of our research efforts are greater than the sum of its parts. Instead of having a self-contained stovepipe research program at the Federal Highway Administration and a separate one at FAA and a separate one at the Federal Transit Administration, we realized that a lot of basic transportation research has a lot in common across the modes of transportation, and it is one of the primary missions of RITA to bring these different organizations together and create the kind of collaboration and synergies that will really achieve that original objective. A good example of how we work across the modes is on a topic that you've probably heard a lot about, which is distracted driving. Secretary LaHood came to me in the middle of last year and asked me to put together our distracted driving summit, which we held in September of last year. And he wanted us to bring together the best thinking across transportation to deal with this issue, because it is not just an issue of one mode of transportation. It's not just about people driving cars. It is also about people driving transit vehicles, people operating aircraft, people operating trains. In fact, the worst distracted driving accident that we've ever experienced was on a train out in California. And the kinds of issues that lead to these accidents have very much in common no matter what kind of vehicle the driver is operating. So instead of going to one of those individual modal agencies to deal with this issue, he came to RITA, and we worked very closely with each of those organizations across DOT to get the best thinking from the FAA about over 50 years of research into distractions in the cockpit, the best thinking of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration on their experience with driver distraction, the best thinking of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration on the research they've done on how distractions affect truck drivers. And we pulled all of this together along with thinkers and researchers and public policy advocates and members of Congress who brought many different perspectives on this issue together in one room at that summit. But is inherently the collaborative nature of RITA and the collaborative spirit of this Secretary of Transportation, Secretary LaHood, that really made that kind of broad dialogue possible.
Regarding your responsibilities and duties, what do you see as the top challenge you face in your position, and how do you address it?
Well, as I've said, we are about collaboration, and very much related to collaboration is communication. In order to make sure that we get the most bang for the buck in terms of our investment in research, we need to be talking to the people that are doing the research, talking to the people that are contracting for the research, talking to the people that envision future research needs. And that doesn't always naturally happen the way you want it to. So we need to have very proactive outreach across not just the operating agencies within the DOT, but the entire transportation community. There's wonderful research brought together in the academic world, at state transportation agencies, at USDOT and other federal agencies, and we want to make sure that we bring to bear the best thinking across all of these different stakeholders to achieve what we want to achieve. So to that end, good collaboration, good communication, huge challenge, and we think we're making tremendous headway in building that much more collaborative spirit.
So I'd like to transition from the organization to you. Mm-hmm. Would you tell us a little bit about your career path, what brought you to where you are today?
Sure. Well, I've been a transportation guy for a long time. My path to where I am today is really based on a very, very long-standing interest in both transportation and in public policy. I got hooked on transportation when I was an undergrad. I was spending my junior year at the London School of Economics and took a course that went the entire academic year called The Economics and Geography of Transport. And it was taught by two wonderful professors, an economist and a geographer. And it really kind of opened my eyes to the particular applications of economics to transportation and the positive impact of good, solid thinking in that kind of economic assessment and analysis to make for good transportation decisions. So coming back from London, I decided this is what I wanted to do in graduate school. I did my graduate work at the MIT transportation program with a focus on airline operations and airline economics. And then my first job in the field of transportation was on the rail side. I came down to Washington. I worked for Amtrak, where I ultimately was head of pricing and yield management, and really applied a lot of what I'd learned in graduate school about airline economics to railroad economics. And that was kind of the first indicator in my career of how much the different parts of transportation are similar to each other in the challenges they face. My next career move, after 4 years at Amtrak, I joined the first Clinton administration at the DOT and became the special assistant to the FAA administrator and dealt with aviation policy, and did that for 4 years. And at that point, when I left the FAA, I went into management consulting. I spent 12 years in management consulting at a large general management consulting firm, A.T. Kearney, and served in their transportation practice. And that's where I really continued this cross-modal theme to my career. In my first year in consulting, I worked with clients in the railroad industry, in the trucking industry, in the airline industry, in the ocean shipping industry. And for the 12 years I was at A.T. Kearney, I continued to work across every mode of transportation and just really enjoyed the diversity, even within what some people might consider the narrow field of transportation. I consider transportation to be an extremely broad field with an extremely broad set of challenges. So really, after Secretary LaHood came on board at DOT, he became aware of me. I had good conversations with him and his team, and I was offered the position to head the Research and Innovative Technology Administration.
What are some of the critical transportation challenges facing the United States? We will ask Peter Appel, Administrator of the Research and Innovative Technology Administration within the U.S. Department of Transportation, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. From contaminated peanut butter to spinach, our food safety net has shown signs of fraying, with tainted products slipping through to retail shelves, causing human harm and economic ruin. Pick up the latest Center report on food safety and find out how critical private-public partnerships are enhancing the current food safety system in America. You can order or download a free copy of this and all of our reports at businessofgovernment.org. What is risk management? How do you manage risk more effectively? How can risk management lead to better decision-making? And what about applying risk management in government? Pick up the Center's report, Managing Risk in Government, An Introduction to Enterprise Risk Management, and find out. This report is especially timely given the Obama administration's focus on accountability and transparency, which has prompted a renewed focus on proper risk management and controls. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Peter Appel, Administrator of the Research and Innovative Technology Administration within the U.S. Department of Transportation. Also joining us from IBM is Kunal Saravanshi. Peter, you mentioned and outlined a key challenge you face as Administrator of RITA, And now, perhaps, could you describe some of the critical transportation challenges facing the country and perhaps outline for us the current state of the country's transportation system and infrastructure?
A key transportation challenge that we face as a country has existed really throughout the world for a long time, but it is as critical, if not more so today than ever. And that is what might be seen as a paradox, which is there's a tremendous amount of excess capacity in our transportation system. And at the same time, there's massive congestion across our transportation system. In other words, there's a lot of excess capacity, but there's also a lot of demand that isn't being met correctly. So why is this? Because people perhaps all want to fly out of the national airport at exactly 8 o'clock in the morning, and maybe not as many of them want to go at 10:30 a.m., or they want to drive to work at 7:30 in the morning, as opposed to at 2:30 in the morning. But reality we face is that there is a lot of excess capacity that we could make a better use of if we put our mind to it. There are modes of transportation that are less congested than others that could be easily substitutes for each other. There's a lot of opportunity for freight going from one part of the U.S. to another part of the U.S. to change from trucking to rail or from rail to water. To me, the broadest and most cross-cutting challenge we face in transportation is understanding what the best way to get goods and people from point A to point B is for any given circumstance, and make sure that we allocate the resources in a way to facilitate that with a continued effort, with good solid analysis, and with good solid investment in those types of transportation that are going to have the most payoff, we could really improve that situation. Another huge challenge we face is the massive environmental footprint of transportation. You know, in the range of a third of greenhouse gas emissions that we put out come from transportation. And so as a transportation professional, I think all of us in this field know that we have a responsibility for reducing that footprint. One way to reduce those footprint is what I said earlier. Make sure we make the most effective decisions on what type of transportation should be used for a given application. But it also means for the existing types of transportation we have to figure out what fuels we can use that might put out less emissions. What are the alternative fuels out there that not only might reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but also might reduce our dependence on foreign oil? So that's the environmental set of issues is another huge challenge we face. And really overlaid on all of that is the idea that we need to work in an integrated fashion across the modes of transportation. And that wasn't always the case. If you look in the 1850s, when the U.S. visionaries were building the greatest railroad network that the world had ever seen, they didn't really have to worry about how they're going to get all the acreage they need to build the rail lines or where to put the rail stations, because there was a lot of excess land available and there was a relatively smooth process to get it built. If you sort of fast forward to the early part of the 20th century, when the U.S. was building the greatest aviation system in the world, we built a lot of airports. We built a great air traffic control system. When we needed to build an airport, we usually found a way to do it, and we moved forward. And yet, if you look today, if you feel you don't have enough airport capacity and think, well, let's build another airport, chances are you're not going to find a place to build it. No one's going to want it in their backyard, and chances are you're not going to find enough land to put it on. And if you do find enough land to put it on, there are all kinds of environmental questions and a lot of congestion challenges that you face that might keep you from doing it. And you move forward to the perhaps one of the greatest transportation achievements that anyone's ever had, which is the interstate highway system in the 50s. Yet again, tremendous challenge, yet we were generally able to build the highways where we needed to build them, and people came to them. Urban, suburban areas really built up in areas where highways were built. And yet, if you decide you need more highway capacity today, it's very, very hard to find either the buy-in from the community or the land. And you want to make sure that if you're building a transportation facility today, you understand the impact it has on other modes of transportation. If you're building a high-speed rail line today, you want to understand the impact it will have, the connectivity it will have to transit lines and the like. So there's all this interplay that needs to occur between different aspects of the transportation system today that didn't necessarily need to occur 50 years ago. So we need to think in a coordinated fashion. We need to think about what are the overall transportation needs of the country or of the state or of the community, and understand how collectively across the different parts of transportation we're going to work in an integrated fashion to make it happen.
Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood outlined a core set of strategic priorities. Would you outline for us those priorities, and how does your research portfolio align with these priorities?
The first priority really stands on its own, which is safety. More than anything else, the U.S. Department of Transportation is committed to advancing safety in transportation. We have the safest transportation system in the world, and yet we want to keep making it safer. Last year, about 34,000 people were killed in traffic fatalities on our roadways. On one hand, people might see that as an improvement because the previous year it was 37,000. The year before that, it was 41,000. The year before that, it was 43,000. We're moving in the right direction, but we have a long way to go in terms of getting our roadways to be as safe as they need to be. That really puts that top priority of the department head and shoulders above any other priority. The remaining priorities are also critical for us. Economic competitiveness, the state of good repair of our infrastructure, livable communities, environmental sustainability, those are all extremely important priorities. And our research program deals with all five of these key priorities. Our safety research program cuts across every mode of transportation. It ranges from human factors research to looking at advanced technologies for air traffic control. So in the area of human factors research, we want to look at what the impact of fatigue is. The research into advanced electronics and technology not only deals with things like air traffic control, but it deals with positive train control on our railroads, and it deals with intelligent transportation systems. So our research priorities are very much aligned with our departmental priorities, and we expect to continue that, improve that alignment moving forward. One of the things about those five key priorities is they all kind of feed off of each other. For example, economic competitiveness. Some of the most competitive economic areas are the ones with good, solid mobility, less congestion, the ability to get from point A to point B quickly. If people can drive to work or can take transit to work or can take some other mode of transportation to get where they need to go, if they can get there more quickly, more efficiently, it's good for the economy. Yet, let's say you're on a bus to work or in a car to work and you see massive congestion on the beltway. Very, very often, that massive congestion results from a traffic collision. If we improve safety and help keep those vehicles from crashing into each other, we contribute to that other goal of economic competitiveness. We also can contribute to environmental sustainability. If those cars aren't stuck in that traffic, they're not putting out the same levels of greenhouse gas emissions as if they had been stuck in traffic. So we don't see these five strategic goals as being independent of each other. Rather, we see them extremely complementary of each other.
Peter, through RITA, Department of Transportation supports research and development of new technologies that make vehicles and roads safer. In December of last year, your department released the Intelligent Transportation Systems Strategic Research Plan for 2010 through 14. Would you tell us more about this plan and the enabling vision that frames it? How does it seek to transform the nation's transportation system through connectivity?
The Intelligent Transportation System Program, I think, is one of the most exciting things we're doing at the DOT today. It involves bring together the best thinking in wireless communications, the best thinking in information technology, the best thinking in data management to address those challenges we face of vehicle safety, of congestion relief, of efficiency. So some of the aspects of the program fall into a category of vehicle-to-vehicle and vehicle-to-infrastructure wireless communication. So, for example, if there are 1,000 cars and trucks and buses driving down the highway, we are looking at technologies whereby they are wirelessly communicating with each other, so each vehicle, and therefore ultimately the driver of each vehicle, has an awareness dramatically better than today of where the other vehicles are relative to them, what the potential dangers are ahead. So, for example, if a vehicle, maybe two cars ahead of you, gets into a crash or stalls, you have an advance warning to help prevent you from crashing into it, to alert other vehicles of basic information about congestion, about weather conditions. There's almost no better weather sensor than windshield wipers on a car entering a rainstorm. If you're a half mile back and you get a signal from a car well ahead that the windshield wipers just went on, that gives you information about how to operate more safely in the seconds that lie ahead. A lot of the Intelligent Transportation Systems program is about wireless vehicle-to-vehicle and vehicle-to-infrastructure communication. What about infrastructure? Understanding what's going on with traffic signals, where a traffic signal can send a signal wirelessly to a vehicle about when it's about to turn yellow, when it's about to turn red. Or the car approaching a stoplight in the middle of the night with no other vehicle around, sending a signal to the traffic signal, enabling it to turn green and let them through because the intelligent transportation technology makes the signal and the car aware of each other in a way that is dramatically improved over what's done today. Other aspects of the program, human factors. If you're bringing all this technology into the vehicle, you want to understand how it's going to affect people driving it. Kind of aligns with the oath that doctors need to take. First, do no harm. We certainly wouldn't want to bring any technology into a vehicle that was going to create any problem for the driver. So we want to make sure that all of this technology is passive technology that will help keep the driver safe without, for example, distracting the driver, without doing something to the operation of the vehicle that would in any way hinder safety, but in every way would advance safety. So we have to do a good bit of research into human factors. We also need to do research into public policy. If we're going to try to make this transformational change in vehicle technology, there are so many stakeholders involved. They're the automakers. They're the builders of infrastructure. They're the state transportation departments that are often the ones investing in the infrastructure. There are other parts of the U.S. DOT that should be on the same page. So there's a good bit of public policy analysis that needs to be done, and that's another big part of our plan on how to bring this all about. So one last thing I'll talk about is just the idea of road weather management. I touched on weather earlier, but weather, huge factor in traffic accidents in this country. We are in a position today to get dramatically better information about weather, get it to drivers in a way that they can use and dramatically increase safety. And so cutting across all of this is the cross-modal nature of our intelligent transportation system program. This is not just about one type of vehicle. And so a lot of our research is into how to make those efficient cross-modal integrations occur.
The core of the ITS program is IntelliDrive. I'd like to delve more into it. Would you describe for us IntelliDrive? Tell us more about its goals, the critical success factors associated with implementing this initiative, and how does Rita see the deployment of IntelliDrive infrastructure unfolding?
Well, IntelliDrive is a name that is sometimes given to what I refer to as vehicle-to-vehicle and vehicle-to-infrastructure wireless communication. This connectivity is a core component of our ITS program, and as I just mentioned, there are a lot of very, very complex decisions that need to be made on how it will be rolled out there. For it to work, first of all those cars have to be speaking the same language as each other. That language that we are pursuing, known as dedicated short-range communication, is a communication protocol that will enable split-second communication for crash avoidance, but it will also enable communications for so many of those other objectives we're seeking in terms of weather information, congestion information, information about transportation alternatives being sent wirelessly from vehicle to vehicle. In order to make this happen, we need to build and continue to build early partnerships with the other stakeholders in the transportation system. We need to build early partnerships with the automakers to understand how such technology would be integrated into an automobile, because ultimately they're the ones that are going to be implementing. We have to build partnerships with local transportation agencies, state highway departments, to understand how we can integrate this kind of communication into the infrastructure. And a lot of that infrastructure is not new infrastructure, it's existing infrastructure. One of the great things about transportation infrastructure design in the last few decades is the modular approach that has been taken. So if there's a traffic signal and we have a box that we want to connect to that traffic signal to enable that signal to communicate wirelessly to vehicles, then you don't need to go buy another traffic signal. You just need to effectively integrate this new technology with existing traffic signal technology. But that requires partnerships. That requires us working very, very closely with the folks that are designing that traffic infrastructure and the folks that are investing in that traffic infrastructure. So there's a lot of work we need to do, and we've been doing it for the last several years, but we're really stepping up the pace in terms of making sure we get all these stakeholders around the table, understanding what their specific suggestions are, objectives are, requirements are, and make sure that we reach consensus on how to move forward in a way that will achieve the public policy objectives. So it's an important set of steps. We need to do tests. We need to do pilot programs. We need to show people this stuff works. And we intend to do all of that in the path toward deployment.
In 2008, more than 37,000 Americans lost their lives, and another 2.3 million were injured in vehicle crashes on America's highways. I know you mentioned that these statistics have been reducing since 2008. Would you elaborate on the key research your organization is pursuing in advancing surface transit safety? What about advances in safety technology?
We have to use every tool in the toolkit to address that number. One way to look at it is to look at sort of where we've come in the last 50 years of traffic safety and where we are going to go in the next 50 years. So what's 50 years ago? 1960. Going back to the 1960s, a lot of the advances in vehicle safety were things like seat belts, first in the front seat and then in the back seat, and then requiring the seat belts to be in the vehicle, and then after that requiring people to actually wear the seat belts in the 70s and into the 80s. Other advances, moving forward into the 70s, the development of the airbag, first in the driver's side, then in the passenger side, then across the vehicle from the 80s into the 90s into today. Other tremendous advances, head impact protection, the padding on the sides of the insides of the vehicles above you, to your left, to your right. All those were wonderful advances, and all of those kinds of advances helped dramatically reduce the fatality rate on our highways. And they brought us to where we are today, which is the occupant of a vehicle that gets in a crash today is dramatically more likely to survive the crash than they would have 50 years ago. So where do we need to go from here? Quite simply, we have to prevent the crash from happening in the first place. And that gets into things like intelligent transportation systems that I was talking about, which is sending on a split-second basis the signal from one vehicle to another of a condition that might be about to cause a crash and give some guidance on what to do to avoid it. But also could be relatively lower-tech technologies, such as a technology that was envisioned decades ago but really is being implemented much more today than ever before, which is rumble strips along the sides of highways to alert a driver if they're drifting off the road. And so those two kinds of technology, both of which the DOT is doing heavy-duty research on, are kind of the opposite ends of the spectrum of technology, but they're both extremely important research, whether it's how you carve into pavement using a very low-tech machine or very, very high-tech wireless vehicle-vehicle communication. It's all about the same thing, which is prevent that crash from happening in the first place, which is the step forward we need to take. And I'm very, very confident that the kind of research we're doing across the department is really going to be transformational. To take that 34,000 number today, which, even though it's improved, needs to be slashed and slashed till it gets to much closer to zero, and take it to that next step.
How does RITA use statistics and analysis to identify and make improvements to the transportation system? we will ask Peter Appel, Administrator of the Research and Innovative Technology Administration within the U.S. Department of Transportation, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. The term cloud computing is suddenly everywhere, with government leaders, industry executives, and the press all talking excitedly about this new concept. Moving to the Cloud, an Introduction to Cloud Computing in Government by David Wild, examines both the interest in and the technology surrounding cloud computing, and why it is receiving such increased attention. It tackles such questions as, what is cloud computing? What are some of the top challenges facing government leaders pursuing cloud computing strategies? You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. As society has become increasingly dependent on information technology in government, business, and in our personal lives, safeguarding private information created or shared on computers or the internet has taken on greater significance. How do you keep information secure in an increasingly interconnected and networked world? What is cybersecurity? Pick up the latest Center report, Cybersecurity Management in the States, and find out. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Peter Appel, Administrator of the Research and Innovative Technology Administration within the U.S. Department of Transportation. Also joining us from IBM is Kunal Saravanshi. Peter, you've mentioned traffic congestion and the deleterious effect it has. I think it's on the order of $87.2 billion annual drain on the U.S. economy, Americans wasting some 4.2 billion hours in traffic each year. Would you tell us about RITA's efforts to reduce traffic congestion, enhance mobility, and sustainable communities?
Well, to come back again to intelligent transportation systems, one of the primary goals of intelligent transportation system is to provide information to drivers that can contribute to reduction in congestion, whether it's alternative routes or the fact that that grade crossing is about to come down and maybe you shouldn't take that route. And so ITS is one area, but another area kind of very much related to ITS is just better and more well-thought-out transportation planning decisions. And a good example of that is something that is being done up in New York right now. It's just up in New York for a ceremony calling attention to something they call quite simply the off-hour delivery program. And what that was a partnership between the New York City Department of Transportation and RPI, a university, and a consulting firm, and a number of folks that needed to do deliveries in Manhattan, whether it be Foot Locker or Whole Foods or other companies. They all got together and said, you know, trucks in Manhattan are caught in congestion all the time. We need to figure out how to get more efficient in making these deliveries, and we need to make use of the best available information to do it. So RITA, our agency, funded this partnership with a grant program through something called our Commercial Remote Sensing Program to help with this very analytical and technologically advanced effort to optimize the times of delivery. And that included using devices in vehicles that would relay the information about where the vehicle was at what times of day and how fast it was moving and where it got stuck. That could be used for analysis to help plan for efficient deliveries. So that program had remarkable impacts for a very simple concept and a simple approach. And we want to do more of that kind of thing. And we want to do more of what we consider to be the core purpose for why RITA exists, which is to ensure that transportation decisions are made based on sound science and rigorous analysis. We want to make sure people have the right information to make decisions. We want to make sure they're using the best possible technology and leveraging the best possible science. And the kind of congestion relief that can result from that is tremendous. Advancing safety, as I talked about, reducing collisions with the kind of research we're doing in safety is also going to contribute to congestion relief. And helping transportation customers figure out the right mode of transportation to use for a particular trip is also going to reduce congestion. If we make people aware that there is a bus coming 7 minutes later and that it's on time and that you can find a place in the parking lot of that bus terminal or that transit station, making that information available to the user efficiently and effectively will reduce congestion, because essentially gets back to that core challenge that I talked about at the very beginning, which is how do you make sure that all this capacity we have is appropriately matched with all this demand we have. The advent of technology helps us do that, and when we do that, significantly reduces congestion.
I'd like to explore the reducing the environmental impact of, say, congestion. And what research is Rita pursuing to advance bio-based and alternative fuels? And what are some of the critical challenges you face in this area?
Well, we are involved in a number of different aspects of research in alternative fuels. Our work up at the Volpe Center up in Cambridge lends key support to the FAA in their Commercial Aviation Alternative Fuels Initiative. We also are part of the cross-agency Biomass Research and Development Board, looking at, in particular, the applications of biomass and biofuels in transportation. And there's some remarkable advances going on. Boeing had came to see us a few months ago and talked about the use of biomass in commercial aircraft and their ability today to take off and land an airplane based almost completely on biomass. It's not something way off in the future. It is it's something that we can see right up the road. And so, yes, very, very promising. There are a lot of issues to address. How safe is biomass fuel-based fuel? How do we make sure we keep it safe? How do we transport that fuel safely? One of the challenges we face in our overall transportation system is the transportation of dangerous things, such as fuels. Are our pipelines best equipped to deal with alternative fuels? And if not, what do we need to do to position them? We're doing research in all of these areas. We're supporting the Sun Grant Initiative, which is a national network of land-grant universities doing federally funded work, primarily in their agriculture programs, on alternative fuels based on agriculture here in the U.S. So it's an exciting area to be involved with, and we're fortunate to be involved in a number of different aspects of dealing with this critical issue.
Well, Peter, I'd like to transition a bit to freight transportation in the U.S. It's increasing in line with the growing population and increased economic activities. Could you describe for us trends in freight transportation and identify some of the research that Rita's pursuing in this area?
I think a lot of the trends in freight transportation kind of mirror the trends of the population as a whole. There is a lot of, urbanization. So there are certain locations that freight wants to go to heavily populated areas, which creates the kind of congestion that we were talking about. For example, if something needs to go on a train from one side of Chicago to another side of Chicago, the congestion in the Chicago area is so dramatic on the rail lines that it often creates a several-day delay in the carriage of that freight. So we must really look at it on a system-wide basis to understand where the bottlenecks are in freight movement and how to address them. And the Recovery Act of last year, U.S. Department of Transportation Tiger Grant Program, which sought to do targeted grants to address key transportation challenges and create jobs in the U.S., focused, for example, on rail congestion and easing rail congestion as a critical area for investment. And what you'll see from a lot of our investments in that program was it was targeted towards the kinds of things that will relieve this kind of congestion, which will have cross-cutting benefits in safety, in economic growth, and in emissions relief. But also, freight shippers are continually getting more sophisticated on how to get their goods from point A to point B. And that gets into identifying the right routings, the right modes of transportation to use for a particular shipment, which might be a different route, a different mode than that same shipment went on the previous year, based on changing traffic congestions, conditions, changing levels of congestion, and the like. Shippers are being made more aware of transportation alternatives, about available capacity on ships, about available capacity on railroad lines, and are able, based on great information technology that's much more available today, to make much more strategic decisions about how to ship. So basically, the trends in freight transportation are there's a continued growth in freight transportation. It's growing. It continues to grow at a healthy clip based on particularly increases in imports as a proportion of our economy, increases in trade in general as a proportion of our economy. There are going to continually be more and more ton miles of freight moved on the trucks, on the rails, on the ships, and shippers are going to continually need to get more sophisticated about how they make use of available capacity across every mode to best get their goods to market.
Throughout the conversation today, Peter, you've mentioned the need for better decision-making, better planning, and data, information, and analysis is really critical to making those things happen. Would you offer some of the examples that RITA has through its Bureau of Transportation Statistics on how it's using statistics and analysis to identify and make improvements to the transportation system?
Well, one of the most significant products of the Bureau of Transportation Statistics is called the Commodity Flow Survey, which we conduct every 5 years to really get as clear as possible a picture of what goods are flowing from what part of our country to what other parts, into what parts, into which ports and out of which ports and the like. Take the results of that survey as an example of data we produce. How do we use it? First of all, we're not the only ones that use it. In fact, the private sector uses the results of this survey much more than the public sector. I used to use the results of that survey when I was in the private sector to help my clients make decisions about where to make investments in transportation. But how does the DOT use those data? Well, the Federal Highway Administration, which works closely with the states on investments in infrastructure, on investments in bridges and lanes and highways, needs to understand trends in where the freight not only flows today, but where it's going to be flowing 5 years from now or 10 years from now. And what kind of facilities are going to be needed, what kind of capacity is going to be needed, et cetera. So a good, solid analysis of freight flows is critical to making future transportation investments and policies. Another part of the Bureau of Transportation Statistics is the generation and analysis of airline operational data. We have tremendous amounts of airline operational data, whether it just be the origins and departures and arrivals of aircraft, the number of passengers on planes, the delays on planes. Those information are used by the FAA and by our aviation policy organization in the Office of the Secretary of Transportation to make critical decisions about infrastructure needs in aviation and to make decisions about public policy needs associated with aviation, but also used by the private sector, by the airline industry, by the airports community, to make decisions about their needs moving forward.
What does the future hold for DOT's Research and Innovative Technology Administration? We will ask its administrator, Peter Appel, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Management of government projects, programs, and portfolios and the related expenditures of public funds are major visible areas of interest and concern. Despite a growing stream of successful program and projects, failures continue at an alarming rate. Pick up the latest Center report, Project Management and Government, An Introduction to Earned Value Management, and find out how this powerful methodology can make your projects more successful. You can order or download a free copy of this and all of our Center reports at businessofgovernment.org. Whether it's the federal government's role in emergency management, its efforts in making operations more sustainable, responsible, and efficient, or the challenges being faced and innovations being forged by local governments during difficult economic times, the Spring 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine offers timely, relevant, and thoughtful perspectives on all of these issues from leading practitioners and public managers. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine, and we know it's all about making connections. introducing our readers and connecting them to the work of government executives who are leading agencies or initiatives that are focused on critical missions, missions important to them. In our latest edition of the Spring 2010 Business of Government magazine, we bring you conversations with FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate, who talks to us about the challenges facing his agency. Michelle Moore, Federal Environmental Executive, outlines sustainability efforts in greening federal operations. And Robert Doerr, Commissioner of the New York City Human Resources Administration, sheds light on how his agency is doing more with less. Our forum is dedicated to exploring ways government leaders and all leaders can make better decisions. All of this and so much more in the Spring 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Peter Appel, Administrator of the Research and Innovative Technology Administration within the U.S. Department of Transportation. Also joining us from IBM is Kunal Saravanshi.
Peter, could you tell us about the Department of Transportation's largest university program, the University Transportation Centers? To what extent does the UTC program contribute to transportation research, education, and technology transfer?
Absolutely. Well, UTC program was formed in 1987, which was the year that I got my master's degree from what became a university transportation center. And so I've been pretty familiar with the program for a long time. And it is making very significant contributions. There are about 60 different university transportation centers representing well over 100 universities of every variety, whether they be large engineering schools or smaller and very diverse set of universities and colleges across the country. It's about basic transportation research. It's about applied research. University transportation centers are doing work in pavement technology. They're doing work in human factors analysis. They're doing work in logistics and optimization of freight flows. And there are just such wonderful faculty and graduate students and undergraduates that are playing such an active role in advancing transportation research at these centers that it's having so many spillover effects beyond just generating research output. Yes, we want university programs to help with public policy research, and graduate students at great universities can be a huge contributor to transportation research that will help with public policy. But university transportation centers contribute so much more than that. They lay a groundwork for the transportation workforce of the future. Our transportation workforce is going to face huge challenges 10, 20, 30 years out at every level, whether it be the engineers that are designing complex transportation systems to the maintenance workers that are maintaining future rail transit cars. At every level, the requirements on that transportation workforce will be more complex and in many senses greater than they are today. And we need to prepare our workforce for the future. This administration has already announced more than $10 billion of investment in high-speed rail for the future of the U.S. And yet, we all acknowledge that the U.S. has not been the leader in high-speed rail. The leaders in high-speed rail have often come from Asia and from Europe, and we have a lot of ground to cover to get really good at high-speed rail, and that includes workers at all those levels I talked about. Yet, the number of graduate programs in this country that deal with railroad engineering has dwindled over the years, and there are extremely few of them left in this country. We need to look at those kinds of things. We need to say, what kind of transportation system are we going to have